Our federal political panel is here from yet another interest rate increase to budget sneak peeks and tussles in the final stretch of the Farrah by-election. Let's have a listen to the week that was in politics.
The Reserve Bank has hiked the official cash rate.
Australians are poorer because of this shock to oil prices.
We know that this inflation is a substantial challenge and we will help to address it in the budget.
People will see that this is a budget that I will be really proud of.
Capital gains tax, negative gearing and the bolter in the last few days, trusts. There will be changes to all three. That's the plan at the moment for budget night next week.
It is not about setting some Australians against other Australians. It's about recognising some of these legitimate intergenerational concerns.
The extent to which government make up the shortfalls for households by giving them more money, it makes it harder to dampen demand.
This weekend, the Farrah by-election will reveal just how deep support for One Nation goes.
Are you getting a video?
Yes, I am.
There's no two ways about it. One Nation has been ascendant in the polls. Our numbers have been tracking down. We're in a bit of a difficult time politically at the moment. And so I think it's reasonable to say that, you know, we have low expectations.
If I move to the lower house, you know, we're rising in the polls. It's something that needs to be taken into consideration, which I will be. And people have been encouraging me to actually look at running for a lower house seat.
Pauline Hanson there, finishing those sounds of the week that was in federal politics. Well, to give you some analysis now, Karen Middleton is political journalist with The Monthly and is here with me in the studio. Karen, good to have you back.
Morning,
welcome back. John Keogh is economics editor at the Australian Financial Review. John, g'day.
Good to be here, Sally.
Stephanie Boris is back, our political correspondent, Steph. Welcome back. John, if I can start with you, the Reserve Bank lifted interest rates by 0.25 percentage points to 4.35% on Tuesday. What did you make of RBA Governor Michelle Bullock's caution to the government on inflation pressures ahead of the budget?
Well, I think she was sending a pretty frank message, not only to the federal government, but actually importantly the state governments that have got a lot of budgets at the moment. We've seen Victoria, Western Australia this week announce more sort of cost of living relief and handouts and discounts for consumers. Probably not helpful for inflation. It might reduce the headline rate on public transport or energy bills temporarily, but ultimately puts more cash in the pockets of people to spend elsewhere in the economy and adds to demand pressures. And that's sort of the pressure, the message that Bullock was sending. Also to the federal government, we've seen reports that there could be a $200 to $300 tax offset in the budget. Look, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a heap of money, but it might be symbolic of where the government's heading and are they going to really keep a tight fiscal purse string as they're insisting.
Karen, we've been watching on as the government has been investing some of its political capital, or that's what we're expecting, addressing intergenerational fairness. What are your observations of the timing of that? This is an issue that's been around for a long time. It's nothing new.
Yeah, I think the government senses not only that this is an opportunity for them to do it, but they actually have to do something now. There's an expectation in the electorate that this government has got a huge majority, it's got a big mandate and it needs to use it to do something to fix the system. Because if you talk to people who take the temperature of the electorate regularly, who do focus groups, qualitative research, they say that people are angry and believe the system is broken. They don't believe that this cost of living crisis is temporary. They feel like it's here to stay, which is diabolically bad for governments and for the Reserve Bank too, which has to monitor expectations. And they expect the government to do something about it. So it's in some ways, I think the government has made the calculation that the risk is greater to do nothing than to be seen to be doing something, even though it means breaking a promise.
Are the demographics of the electorate becoming just too... The change is too big to miss now that younger voters are, they're making up a significant majority.
Yeah, and it's there in that phrase, intergenerational fairness or intergenerational equity. That's the code the government's using for what it really is talking about in this case in the budget, capital gains tax concessions and negative gearing. The housing market or housing issue is the big totemic issue that really says, highlights the difference between the generations, that people of my generation and older have had access to the housing market that young people just are looking at going, we cannot get there, and the government's going to have to do something. There's a question about what these measures changes might do in reality in the short term, maybe not that much, but they are something that's material and visible, saying the government hears you and we're trying to fix it.
Stephanie, we've got these priorities for the government of trying to deal with inflation, but also trying to manage cost of living pressures on individuals as well. How are we seeing that being framed in the lead up to the budget?
Yeah, so you've got two elements, as you just said there, with wanting to address cost of living. It is a good headline for governments if they can say, hey, we're giving you a bit of money essentially for free. But as we all know, nothing comes for free. And that's then the other side of what this could do around inflation and also for the budget in general. Interesting to note that following the reports of that income offset of around $200 to $300, once that was reported, the opposition leader, Angus Taylor, didn't actually rule it out or say it was totally a bad idea. He said he wanted to look at the details, which is fair, but at the same time, sometimes the opposition does rule out thought bubbles or ideas without seeing all the information. So that is a little bit of a signal coming from the opposition that they're very aware people are hurting and that they want some level of support, but it's about finding support that doesn't actually do bad in the long term as well.
John, other issues which have been kicked down the road for a long time, and that is fuel resilience, having enough stockpiles as well, being able to look after ourselves here in Australia and deal with our long supply chain should something go wrong. We've had this $10 billion fuel resilience package which has been announced, but also cuts to the Inland Rail project. What can we read from these pre-budget drops, do you think?
Oh, look, I think both sides for a long time have probably overlooked fuel resilience, the Coalition and Labor. Now they're sort of scrambling to make up for that, increase our stockpiles and reserves. That's going to take time. It's going to be costly. But, you know, some of these things around sovereignty resilience are justifiable. Fuel would be one of the things that you'd say that's reasonable to spend money on that as an insurance policy. What I worry about as sort of an economist is that national resilience sovereignty is used as an excuse to throw money at all sorts of other boondoggles, you know, pet projects that really we can probably rely more on the market for, because it becomes a very slippery slope. You can point at a whole lot of things where we might have supply chain vulnerabilities, and sure, but is it really worth the cost? Because at the end of the day, you're moving resources from one part of the economy, which is arguably more productive, to other parts that are less productive. We've got low unemployment, full employment at the moment. That puts inflation pressures, not but good for productivity. So I'd want to see this very limited to things like fuel reserves. There's an argument, for example, around pharmaceuticals, those sorts of things as well. Make sure you get those when you know, someone like China or someone controls the supply chains along those things. But we just want to confine it and not it become a broad brush things for everything.
And when we're talking about cost too, there's actually also the cost to consumers, as in the motorists. Mm. The government publicly hasn't said, but very much does acknowledge when you're talking to ministers, you know, privately, that yes, this will have a cost at the Bowser as well. What that cost is, that obviously remains to be seen.
Karen, on a separate issue, breaking news this morning, two women with links to Islamic State group have been charged with crimes against humanity offences allegedly committed in Syria. It follows a woman being charged in Sydney late last night for allegedly entering and remaining in a declared conflict zone and joining ISIS. There's complicated politics here with these women and also the fate of their children, those who have returned.
There certainly are, and that's why it's taken so long for them to get back, because it's the domestic politics of this that has really dominated this whole issue. There's been pressure from other countries on Australia for a long time through successive US administrations in particular to take responsibility for the Australian citizens who went to join ISIS or to join partners who were with ISIS. And this is finally the Australian nation doing that. The security agencies have assured us that they can manage this situation. I think everyone would welcome, if there are allegations that these people have broken Australian law, that everyone would welcome that they are being charged and will face justice. And that is, I suppose, a sign that the agencies are onto this and will monitor these people. But they are Australians, and for all the suggestion that they have to, you know, they can be kept out, it's very difficult to keep them out of the country. There's one woman who's been on a temporary exclusion order, but the agencies have said they can't apply that to the others. They don't meet the test. They don't meet the standard. So they're back. They'll face justice. And that's a good thing, I think.
Well, big thank you to our Friday political panel. Karen Middleton is political journalist with The Monthly. Karen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sally.
Stephanie Boris, our very own, and John Keogh, economics editor with the Australian Financial Review, stretching ahead of the marathon next week of Budget Week. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.